The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 402 on the podcast day. Fund manager and author of The Art of Execution, How the World's Best Investors Get It Wrong and Still Make Millions. This is a book I cannot recommend enough. I read it last week, and I've changed my investment strategy based upon the contents of this book. It's very easy to read, and the stats are, you know, unequivocal. So I highly recommend it. By the way, go to voxmarkets.co.uk/blog, and you can click the link there, and it'll take you through to Amazon if you want to buy it. It's not expensive, but it's helped me a lot. And this is lots of data from Lee, who was a fund manager and employed some of the best fund managers in the world. Also on the podcast, Nicola Duke, technical analyst, Charts, Barclays, Stratex, Glencore, Plutus PowerGen, and Starcom. And the charts will be up here at voxmarkets.co.uk/blog. Check them out. You can listen to the podcast and look at the charts. They've been annotated by Nicola, and you can see where she gets the information from and how she discusses the charts. Also, it's a triple rollover. Oh, yeah, in the oil price sweepstake. Nobody guessed exactly today that Brent crude would be $34.60 at midday. There are a couple of close guys there, and there was 62, I think 63 cents, a couple of cents out. But it's got to be spot on. That means $100.44 will roll over to next week's price of Brent crude at midday on Friday. So let's say it's around about, let's say it's the same as this week, for example. That'll be $134.60 or $135 next week. So get involved there. Go to voxmarkets.co.uk/OPS and make your guess for next week. The guesses have to be in by 4:30 on a Thursday, and we take the price at 12 o'clock midday on the Friday. If you were spot on, you have to be spot on, you win that cash. Also coming up, I have today's stock with potential as suggested by you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is author and fund manager, it's Lee Freeman Shaw. Thanks for coming on, Lee.
Absolute pleasure, Justin. Thanks for having me.
Now, it was a good sort of, well, it was, in fact, it was a lucky break. Last week we were meant to speak, but because of tech problems, we didn't speak. But it gave me a chance to read your book. And I've got to say, I loved it. It's called The Art of Execution. There is a subtitle there somewhere, isn't it? It's not about killing, like you say.
Yeah, sorry to disappoint those readers who think it's about that. It's actually about how the world's best investors get it wrong and still make money. And it's in a nutshell, it's about my experience over several years managing 45 of the world's top investors, literally top investors, and coming to the discovery that actually most of their ideas turn out to be wrong, and yet they still make a lot of money. And sort of like, how can that be that they really, you know, tend to get things so wrong and yet so right in terms of making money?
Yeah, well, do you know what? This gives the everyman, you know, a bit of hope, the everyday man a bit of hope, I think. And I loved it. I've even changed. I've come up with a spreadsheet. I've even changed my particular way of investing. And we'll go through it. But first of all, let's have a bit of background about yourself. You're still a fund manager, aren't you, Lee?
Yeah, I'm still a fund manager. Work for Old Mutual Global Investors. I manage over $3 billion currently. So that's what I do for a day job.
Yeah, wow. And when you were doing this, I mean, when did you start have the idea for the book, or were you just collecting data? And or was it, I'm going to write a book on this, or what happened? How did it happen?
The epiphany moment happened when many years ago we came up with an idea which is based on an academic study I don't want to bore the listeners about, but basically which suggested if you want to make the highest return on your money, what you do is you invest in just your best ideas, a handful of ideas. So back in 2006 we scouted the world for some of the world's top investors, and we said, look, have some money. And it was, you know, between the sort of like, you know, $30 and $150 million, and just invest in 10 ideas that are your best ideas to make money. And obviously the academic study suggested that was a foolproof idea. What we actually discovered was with some guys it worked and some guys it didn't. But the real wow moment was for me, and what led to this book was there was one particularly legendary investor who, if you look, just looked at his returns he made, they were phenomenal. Well, actually, when you met him and you looked at how successful he was in terms of the ideas he had put money into, he was awful. It was literally, you know, one in three of his ideas made money, more or less a 30% hit rate. And you're just going, is this guy just lucky? Or is this some skill? Is there some secret sauce behind what he does that means he can throw money at ideas, be wrong most of the time, and make money? And because I, obviously, in the fortunate position of managing these investors, having access to all the trades they've ever done, I could dig into the trading data, and I discovered that there were certain things this guy did when he was losing,
yeah,
and certain things he did when he was winning, which actually meant that he could be wrong most of the time and still make money. I thought, well, these principles are quite simple, and anyone could sort of like apply them, and just to see if they were, just to make sure, obviously, you know, when you think you've hit on something, you've got to verify it. So I checked amongst all the investors I managed, and I discovered that, you know what, all the guys that have been very successful for me had two things in common. One, their ideas generally sucked. So it was a toss of a coin as to whether their ideas made money, despite the fact that, you know, these are legends of decades of experience, resources you or I would die for in terms of analysts and, you know, access to material. And yet it was a toss of a coin. So you go, okay, so that confirms that actually success investing isn't necessarily about getting the idea right. It's about how you play the game, how you execute. And I looked at, basically, do these guys all possess the same sort of habits of execution? So when they're losing, do they do the same types of thing? And when they're winning, do they do the same things? And I discovered they do. So that was the common thread that bound them all together. And at the time, you know, I realized this hadn't been really addressed in any book, and not surprising, so I was still am in a privileged position of managing these guys. So I thought, well, there's a book in here and people should know about this. And I think it, you know, if you come to the realization that your idea is probably going to be wrong, but you haven't got to worry if you play the game as I sort of suggest in a book, I think that sort of will help a lot of investors sort of get a better outcome.
Yeah, well, do you know what I like so much? It's because for a while I've been saying on the weekend podcast with a couple of mates I do about it's a bit more lighthearted, but it's about, you know, stocks and shares. And I said, I believe you can only buy one share in your lifetime. If you get to know it very well and you buy it right, and you consistently buy it right, you can make money in one stock for the rest of your life. And it's essentially, your book is I'm sort of boiling it down into a sort of clumsy summary, but it's not what you buy, it's how you buy it, isn't it?
Exactly, and you've hit on a perfect example there in terms of the guys that were really successful. A common thread is when they were winning, they, in simple terms, they ran their winners, and I put them in a tribe in the book called connoisseurs. So when you're winning, you'll either turn into a raider who takes profits early, and that's a bad thing, or you'll be a connoisseur and you know, make sure you win big when you're winning. And you're absolutely right. I mean, all the guys that ever did really good for me, the presence of a handful of big winners, and if you get something right, I think the worst thing you can do is, oh, I've made 20%, book that profit, because all the time, you know, you're never going to win big.
Well, do you know what? It underlines what I watched a chart in the week from this guy who's quite a good trader, and I also chatted to a fund manager in the week, and two things underlined what you're saying there. First of all, I said to this ex-fund manager, I said, I've been reading a cracking book, and it's about these guys get it wrong 49% of the time. And he said, well, they must lose money. I said, no, because the winners they win big on, the losers they either cut or you know, or add to in some way. So I said, and this guy who did the trading video said, essentially, looking at lots of data, he see even new investors, new traders, can make the right buy pretty much 50% of the time. They lose money because they don't know when to get out, or they don't know what to do. And it's about, and I liked it, you break it down into, like, when you're sitting on a losing trade, there's three things you can pretty much do, and you categorize that. And the worst thing of all is be a rabbit, like you said, is do nothing and just sit there, let the loss get bigger and bigger and bigger. And pretty much, probably the second biggest, best thing you can do is cut the loss. And you said, these guys, what do you call these guys? Not the hunters.
assassins.
The assassins, yeah. Almost sometimes they can be too ruthless. And they can see their, you know, if they cut too early sometimes, that trade can come back, whipsaw, and they could have been in a profit. But the best guys of all are guys, like you said, the hunters, but they plan almost for a fall in the stock price, and they start going bigger as it goes down, and so they don't. So their initial buying price is not relevant. It's where the average buying price is, and when it rises by, you know, a little bit, it's almost compounding that gain. Isn't that right?
That is absolutely spot on. I mean, the fact is, if you think about it, we all know. Okay, and my findings suggest it's a toss for a coin whether an idea works. Now, if you don't cut off those big losers, then you're basically engendering a native skew, and you're going to lose. And what the hunters, what they do fantastically well is their mindset is, you know, I'm going to be wrong. Even though I've done tons of research, years of experience, I'm going to be wrong. So I'm not going to put all my eggs in one basket. Mm. I'm not going to go all in day one. I'm going to put some money in there. And, you know, if I'm going to be wrong, at a certain point, I'm prepared to more or less double up. And to your point about getting whipsawed, what they recognise is you don't want to add to an idea too quickly when you're losing. You know, wait till you're down, you know, my findings suggest around about sort of like 25%-ish. And then that's when you want to do something, because if you do something when you're down from up to 20%, you tend to get whipsawed. But if you're prepared to throw more money at an idea when you're down about 25%, that's how you get yourself out of jail, if you like. And if it's part of the plan, clearly you've only put a bit of your money in the idea day one. You've got the capital somewhere else, which you can throw at the idea when that comes along. And that's how you can stay in the game when you're losing and have a possibility of turning a loser into a winner. And hunters are just, they just have the emotional discipline to not panic when it's going pear-shaped. And the only reason they don't panic is because they've planned for it. And having a plan absolutely key.
Spot on. I was thinking, everyone buys a stock, especially new investors buys a stock. Then it goes down. They go, oh, no, oh, no. It's like panicking. But hang on. But if that's part of your plan, and people say, when I mentioned averaging down a couple of times on Twitter, people say, no, don't average down, average up. But I think, especially in a bear market sometimes, you have to be prepared to accept you're not going to be spot on. If you could pick a price perfectly every time you trade, you'd be more, you know, you'd be richer than Warren Buffett. And in fact, that's what he does. He does do that. He will buy stock. He says, you know, I've done the research on stock. I know what it's worth. If it goes down, I'll buy more. It's a bargain, you know, because where he's buying at the moment, he sees it as a good deal. So if it goes down a bit more, that's for him, that is, you know, sale prices. So it's that thing about planning, putting a little bit in to start with, not chucking everything you've got, and almost, you know, weighing that risk up. And as long as your risk is managed properly, it's fine, isn't it, really?
Exactly. I mean, the worst investors I've worked with over the years are what, you know, you referred to earlier as rabbits. Yeah. You know, when they don't have a plan, so they have a great idea, they get excited, they put money in the idea, it goes against them, and it goes down a lot, and then they sort of go, oh God, what? I'm not sure what to do, because they've already committed a lot of capital. They're at in their head, the idea is still a good one, but they're not willing to do anything. And you sort of have these bizarre conversations saying, hold on, you're sitting there, you're telling me this is a fantastic idea to make a lot of money. Why aren't you, you know, it's down 50%. Why aren't you throwing a lot more money at it? And you get these bizarre answers from them, which is, oh, I've committed enough capital. Oh, I'm not sure about this or that. And you, they end up doing disastrous because, and the reason they're called rabbits is because two things, you know, when a bit like a rabbit in the headlights, when unexpected things happen, in this case, the share price goes down, they're losing, they just don't know what to do. They just freeze. And the second thing is by doing that, Sod's Law, a few of those names keep going down, going down, going down, and you get yourself in such a, you know, dig such a dig, a big hole, you can't actually get out of it. Mm. And if you're down 50%, I think what a lot of people don't appreciate is you're down 50, you need 100% to just get back to break even.
Yeah.
You know, it's and that's a big ask for for an investment.
Yeah, I mean, you had a stat or something, and I know a lot of the time. I mean, a lot of guys listen to podcasts talk into micro caps and small caps, which they can do. I've seen a micro cap do 600% in a day. They're ridiculous. I mean, but you're talking about mid caps to larger caps. But there's a stat somewhere. You said if they get down to like. I can't remember the stat, but you said the chances of they get down to 50% down, the chance of them making even 20% above where they bought in is very minimal. There's a small percentage chance, yeah.
Yeah, I mean that's exactly. So I did some bit of research into, you know, if you're a rabbit, how dangerous is it being a rabbit? And this should really make any listener to this realize that when you're losing, you've got to materially adapt. Either turn into an assassin, cut your losers, or turn into a hunter and buy a lot more of the shares. So here, I mean, here's the key stat. It's basically, so I mean, of the rabbits I sort of hired, if 131 of their investments fell by more than 40%. Now, what amazed me was of those shares that fell by more than 40%, not one of them bounced back to recover and let that investor break even. But even more shocking was that actually 21 of those ideas went on to produce from their low point bounced to go up over 100%, and despite bouncing and going up 100% from the low point, they still didn't break even.
And that's
purely a function of, if you think about it, if you're down 50, you need 100% to get back where you started if you do nothing.
And that's
what happens. So, you know, if you do nothing, you really are digging a hole you're never going to get out of. So you've got to adapt pretty early. And just to give you an idea, I mean, if you're down 20%, to break even, you just need 25% return.
Mm-hmm.
But if you ride something down 75%, that stock needs to rebound 300% just to break even. And that's what happens with the rabbits. They dig holes that they just can never get out of, because, you know, the chance of being in a stock that goes up 300% is quite slim. As you say, you only need one of those in your lifetime. And stocks that you're in that go up 300%, you know, they don't happen every day.
No, and do you know what is telling here? It's odd that as investors, we buy a share that expect it to go in our favour, because if anything, what's out of our control is the share price. Now, what we can control is our risk. So you control the risk, and you can do all the research. You control it by doing lots of research on a company. You can control that. You can find out fundamentally if the company is strong, and then you can control how much you apply funds to that investment, so that you can control the risk. We can't control the share price. So if you plan that the share price is going to go down, because you should do, really, because no one knows where the share price is going to go in the short term, then you should be fine. And so, in actual fact, averaging down is not dangerous like people think if you've planned for it. In fact, it's quite sensible, because you could try to control your risk. But as long as, like you say, you only apply, I don't know, say 5% of your money to that in actual stock, and don't go over that, and don't start chucking money at it, so you're like 50% exposed. But I mean, you know, that's what it is. You can control the risk, but you can't control the share price. So it makes sense to make a plan that it goes down, you know?
Exactly. I mean, even in the book, I sort of refer to, you know, legendary investor Peter Lynch, who came out once. He said, you know, if you can't convince yourself to buy when you're down 25%, you'll never make a decent profit in stocks. I think that beautifully captures, you know, the problem with being a rabbit. If you're down 25, not only from a compounding geometric return perspective are you getting in a hole you can't get out of, but it's not you're in a losing game.
Exactly. If you bought when it was like a pound, and now it's like 75 pence, and you can't buy any more. Why? You bought it a pound. Why are you not buying 75 pence? It's a bargain, isn't it? If the fundamentals and nothing has changed, obviously fundamentally nothing's changed, then it's a bargain still, surely.
I know, and you know, and I've had these weird conversations with guys that are professionals, seriously experienced, some legends, and you have those conversations with, you know, the ones that have done poorly for me over the years, and you sort of say, look, it's down 40%, why aren't you buying more? And they realize they're being irrational, but they just you know, psychologically, some people just don't do the right thing when they're losing.
That's it. It's like a human emotion, isn't it? It's like the stock market. You know, when it starts tanking, people, you know, who understand, who make lots of money, will start buying. And yet most people, a lot of people will start running and being scared. Say, oh, don't buy anything, it's crashing, you know. So, have you, the way you work now, I don't know if you invest your own funds or you just look for other people to invest stuff, but have you changed the way you operate as a result of your book coming out?
Yeah, so, I mean, when I discovered these findings, you know, I mean, let's face it, when you examine the trades of 45 top investors, 31,000 trades, and you discover things that, you know, it's got a lot of efficacy, makes a ton of sense. I mean, it did change the way I manage the investors I have. So, you know, if I have any investor that exhibits rabbit tendencies, they get shot.
Yeah.
So they, you know, I don't want those in my team. And I do apply these principles, which I allude to in the book, in the way I run money. So I run money direct myself, as well as hiring people. And I give you a recent example, Royal Dutch Shell.
I'm into that, big time.
There you go. So, yeah. So that, there you go. That's a stock I sort of went into October of last year. And so from a buy and hold perspective, from then till now, it's been a bad idea. It's down about 17% if you had done nothing. I'm actually making money. And the reason I'm making money is because it got to a point, you know, I was down 25%, whereby, you know, I know from my findings, I've got to materially adapt. And my personal approach is to be a hunter. You know, it's to, you know, what you say, pound cost average. So down 25, because I had position sized it small, because I knew my findings are, you know, an idea, chance of it being right, is 50%, toss for a coin. So you sort of go, okay, go in smaller than I would like to, but that's because I think I'm probably going to be wrong. And when it got down 25%, I was prepared to throw more money at it. And I did that. And as I sit here today speaking to you, you know, I'm in the money. And all at the same time, I've collected a nice dividend along the way as well. So,
do you know what? I wish I'd read this book back in. I started buying this back in, let me think, I was on holidays back last summer. I thought this is amazing. It started tanking the price. And I think I'm about 10% down now. But I went in too big at the start. And I am overexposed in this, and I wish I'd start out really small. But I'm now, I think my average price is about 17.5 quid, even though I bought higher than that. So I'm down less than 15%. So, you know, if I just sat there, though, I'd be down about 25-30% now. So, you know, so yeah, and like you say, they are paying around an 8% dividend, and you reinvest those shares. And in fact, so I'm reinvesting those shares. And like I said, that's also averaging down for me. So that's, you know, it's quite nice. But I like that. And if you've got any more ideas there, because I think, you know, I don't want to give everything away, but people should get this book because it's very easy to read. I mean, even for me, I read it through and a couple of days took me and I thought, wow, that is excellent. I love that. And I even got my spreadsheet and started working out, you know, how to average down, looking at the percentages, drops and all this stuff. And so it has changed the way I'm investing even now. And even this bear market, sold out a couple of stocks and started to put limit orders in a bit lower, you know. So, but any other thoughts, Lee, before you say goodbye?
I mean, so in I think in a nutshell, I mean, the lesson of the book is sort of, if you're losing, basically become an assassin or a hunter. So be an assassin, cut the loss, get out, move on. Be a hunter, throw more money at an idea. Don't be a rabbit doing nothing. It's not an option. All the guys I've worked with, it always leads to failure ultimately. And when you're winning, be a connoisseur. Try and ride your winners. All the investors I've had that where they're poor investors effectively take profits too early. You know, they make 20%, they get out and they rotate the money. In the back of the book, I mean, I give a short checklist of a winner's checklist of what, a 5-point plan, if you like, of what investors should do. But basically, you know, I mean, only invest in your best ideas, sort of like position size matters. And that comes from the point of view that, you know, my findings suggest you're going to be wrong. So don't go all in day one. Be greedy when you're winning. That's number three. Number four is materially adapt when you're losing. So become an assassin or a hunter. And number five, which is the one which is often forgotten, is only kind of invest in liquid stocks. And I say that because it's no good wanting to do the right thing and being able to not do it because there isn't enough liquidity to buy or sell in the stock you're in. That's the lessons in a nutshell. And I think, you know, the book is meant to be user-friendly for a novice investor to a professional investor. And they're very simple principles that anyone can apply. And the key thing as to whether you'll be successful if you apply these principles is just if you have the discipline and the plan to stick with it. And that's where I think most people fail. They just lack the discipline or lack having a plan. And in a nutshell... That's it.
I did recommend it after I finished it last week. It's called The Art of Execution, How the World's Best Investors Get It Wrong and Still Make Millions in the Markets. And I'll put a link to it. It's by Lee, obviously, Freeman Shaw. I'll put a link to that. Lee, thanks for coming on. It's changed the way I invest. So hopefully that's a good thing.
Well, thank you very much. And I really appreciate you having me. And I'm glad you enjoyed the book. I really do. Thank you very much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is the lady with the technicals. It's the Duchess of the Chart. It's Nicola Duke. You're right, Nick.
Hey, Justin. Very good, thanks.
What's happening? It's all over the place. Obviously, today we're recording this before non-farm payrolls come out. But that has this is a very important figure because it's like if it's poor, the figure, then that will be sort of good news in a way, won't it?
Well, I think there are people in the market who think that the Fed have made a policy error by hiking rates and are openly talking about it. And any bad data will kind of support that view. And so the market is already thinking that there won't be more rate hikes this year, even though the Fed said they would do four. And so it might be one of those occasions where a bad jobs number is, you know, good news because there won't be any immediate rate hikes, and we could see, you know, some initial volatility and then stocks rally on that. And a good jobs number would be the opposite, you know.
Yeah, so how that works is essentially, I suppose, so the dollar then will weaken a little bit, and obviously the price of like things like oil are priced in dollars, so it'll be cheaper for consumers, countries, and so that will rally all, will it? Or oil will probably rally, will it?
Yeah, but you know, in this market, I don't think that like... oil is you know, the positioning in oil, which was very, very full of shorts who are being squeezed out, means that the oil is almost driving everything else. So the oil can be pushing the dollar at the moment. So we've seen a couple of days this week, you know, oil has turned first and then the currencies and the stocks and everything has moved with it. So, you know, that is one to watch as well.
Yeah. And I'm just looking at the guidance here. The consensus for January is 190,000 jobs added compared with 292,000 in December. So I suppose if they get lower than 190,000, that's not a good thing then, I suppose. Well,
On Wednesday, we had ADP jobs, which I think was 200 and something.
Okay.
And we sold off on that.
Oh, okay.
So to watch out.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's look at some individual stocks as suggested by listeners to the podcast. And so we're starting off with Barclays Bank. I hold these, but trouble is they're not in my ISA account. I've got a small holding in my other account, which that's all I've got. And I don't really pay attention to it, which is bad, I know. But they've come off really badly, Barclays, haven't they?
Yeah, and it's, you know, there's nothing wrong with Barclays. I'm really upset because this was like one of my favourite pick charts. But, you know, Credit Suisse and Deutsche Bank and what's been happening at the European banks, and if you look at American banks, even worse, not doing very well at all. So, you know...
And why is it? Is this because...
I like Barclays chart better than any other bank chart, but... I think there's some pretty nasty contagion going on.
Yeah, so it's essentially because people are exposed to the, the oil sector, the energy sector. Is that what it is? What's going on?
No, I think that in Europe anyway, it's non-performing loans and they're just not making any money, you know?
Okay, all right. So Barclays, we're at 173 today. Literally,
I'm not exactly sure what's wrong with the banks. I have to own up. I am a technical analyst.
Yeah, no, I'm asking you fundamentals here.
I struggle with them.
So let's go with the chart. Let's look at the chart. It's in a downtrend there completely. All the moving averages are facing downwards. And it doesn't, I mean, are there any support levels there you can see or what?
So we had two weekly hammers the last time we looked at this, and we really needed to hold this 177, 179 level. And we didn't. We didn't break the highs of those two weekly hammers that we were looking at, that two-week range, and we've broken below. To be honest, only a weekly close above 177 today, which, you know, if we get a really big rally on stocks after a non-farm might do it, then we might possibly save this Barclays setup. So I would look for a close today above 177. Otherwise, the next support is down at 147.
Yeah, that was
it's the kind of zone 144, 147.
And those previous supports are back in, what, 2012,
weren't they? 2012 lows, lows and late 2011. That's where the next one is. And there's Fibonacci support that lines up there as well.
Okay, so I mean, you know, sit back a while and watch. Yeah, don't jump in.
Yeah, because, you know, it's very oversold. It could turn around. So I would say, yeah, don't jump in. You know, this, it really needs to get above it to confirm that it's bottomed. It needs, as I said last time, it needs to get above 195. Mm-hmm. So, you know, don't pile into this one. If we close today above 177, there's some hope for this. Otherwise, I think you might need to sit out and wait for the mid 140s.
Okay. Next. Sorry. That's all right. Well, hey, you're not in charge of the price. It's not up to you.
No,
so, Stratex, STI, was the next company suggested. It's a little bit of a tiddler there in the energy sector. What do you see on this?
Yeah, I really like this one. And look, we're hanging around here by the 200 moving average, which is a 164, and the 100, which is 167. We have to get above both of those and close above today for me to like this one. But on the weekly, it's poking up too. So it's made, you know, we've made a higher low. Now we need to see a higher high to confirm we've reversed the trend.
Marvellous.
I've got some levels. I'll take it up. But again, I'd like to see a daily, a weekly close today above 170 to inspire me that this is going higher. Otherwise, a daily close next week above that level.
Yeah.
Because 170 is a bit of a pivot, and then of course the resistance above that is 185.
Okay, so yeah, I'm just looking at
very positive. The 20s crossed above the 50s.
Yes,
moving our way. Oscillator is moving up, not down. It all looks good to go higher. We're still below that resistance.
You took the words right out of my mouth. I was just going to say that. I was just going to say, look, the 20-day, 50-day is looking good, and the MACD and the RSI is looking good. So, okay, let's move on to the next one. Let's look at Glencore, of course, the play on the old copper there, and I suppose, and it's hammering. It went, then that profits warning, the debt problem, it went down, dropped like 25% in one day, which for a big stock is a lot. You know, it's a big drop for anything. But I mean, and then it rallied back up from like, what was it? We went down to sort of, 60 odd pence, yeah. And then went back up to sort of 120. Now it's at about 103. What do you reckon?
This looks fabulous, doesn't it? So yesterday we had the big gap higher, and then it broke straight through that resistance that we had at 96 and through the 100-day moving average. And then today we've continued higher. Now, the highs last October and the lows, which was in January, we have hit at 104.40. We have hit the 50% retracement of that, and that's right where we are now today. So potentially we could stall there and fall back. So if you're not long this, watch it, because we could come back a little bit today and you could get in. So we could find support back at that 100-day moving average that we broke through, which is at 97, or the previous resistance will become support around 96. So if we stall here and you're not in it and it comes back there, then it's one to watch.
Okay, yeah, and of course, copper looks to be, I did dread to say it, copper looks to be, you know, maybe hit a bottom here, and I've been looking at the charts quickly. What do you think?
the best thing about these is not just copper, but all the industrial metals. Platinum has had a really nice breakout. Copper has reversed the trend. And gold has been on an absolute ripper and has broken through yesterday the 200-day moving average. So everything looks pretty good.
I kept posting last couple of days on Twitter saying, I think, oh, that's the bottom, $27. That was it. And we've had lots of bad news out, even inventories going up and everything. But, you know, all that news about Iran coming back online was such a bad thing. That, I mean, I think that's when the lows have hit. And now we haven't gone back. We haven't retested that. So I think...
Yet, but be careful. Remember, oil does like to retest lows. It likes to, you know, double bottom and come back. So if we get a proper short squeeze going, we won't come back. But potentially we could.
I'm going to fly in the face of all wisdom. I'm going to say, listen... It will retest, of course, but I don't think it'll get to anywhere near. I doubt it whether it'll get below $30.
Right. I.
this is me based on nothing whatsoever. Just looking at the chart, looking at all the fundamentals, and thinking that's it. It's a guess. But I'm surprised. You as a technical analysis, you may say no, it will.
And that's your Brent price, isn't it? I have big support. Like, I would not see Brent below 25, but we might go there.
Oh, there we are. I'm saying we'll go below 30. All right, so here we are. So
might go there.
Okay, let's go with the next stock, Plutus Power Gen, PPG, and it's a small stock, and they are in the business of supplying to the grid. You know, when there's a shortage in, apparently all these old power stations in the country are coming offline, and every now and again, when there's peak demand on electricity, we fall short. These guys have these sort of little, you know, temporary power stations that kick in kind of thing, and supply the grid with that short supply of electricity. So what do you reckon, PPG?
Yeah, I sort of like this one. The 200-day moving average, though, is at 1.0733, and we're sort of struggling at it today. And I would like to see us get above it. And I think that there's a chance that we might not, and we might go a little bit lower first. I think that the low looks really good, and, you know, we've reverse the trend. We're making higher highs and higher lows. But if you switch to a weekly, if we close today where we are now, we've got a weekly bearish shooting star below the moving averages, which says at the very least we'll probably, you know, retrace half of this rally. Yeah, I think so
back to where, below a penny, where's it going?
Maybe just slightly below a penny, you know. The 20-day moving average, which I really like, is at a penny, and so is that previous swing high from the late January. So perhaps back to a penny and see what happens there. So positive signs, but don't rush into this one.
Yeah, okay. And the last stock is also a tiddler suggested by some listeners. It's Starcom, ticker code STAR. Now, what's happening doesn't look encouraging, the chart, does it?
Awful. No. When we looked at this before, you know, it had really good support at 2 pence,
yeah.
Yeah, that was the 2015 lows, and we in the last week, you know, we've gapped below it, and we're sort of hanging around down there. The 20-day moving averages are back at 2. And the oscillator hasn't quite, you know, the RSI, the MACD haven't quite bottomed yet. So maybe, but no, not right now. Don't buy this one yet.
Okay,
wait
cool.
Wait for some better signs of bottoming.
Yeah, all right, yeah. A better bottom we're looking for there. Marvellous!
Yeah, for right now, you know, we could, go lower.
Okay, cool.
Right, Fibonacci support is really low in this one, 0.25, which is not...
I know, yeah. Okay, all right, marvellous. Well, Nick, I know it's a busy day for you because you trade off the NFP, the non-farm payrolls there, but is there any chance you can...
you'll get the charts before, much before. NFPs, and yes, you'll get the charts before. I would just be cautious on this one, you know, because good news might be bad news today.
Yes.
I'd like to see, you know, a good rally, but everything points to lower.
Yeah, but you know what, though? When I see something like Royal Dutch Shell... I mean, you know, rallying yesterday 6% on bad news, and you know, and also up to day, what is it up to day? Up to, over 2% a day, so it's over 8% last, you know, 2 days. You're thinking, what's going on here? Because it's a big company.
Honestly, it's the volatility in oil, and it is moving everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, in fact, don't send me the chart, but can you have a quick look at Royal Dutch Shell? Because it's literally, if you look at it, it's moving, you know? And I'm thinking, I know we've seen this kind of move before at a higher level where it broke through the 50-day moving average and all that, but it seems to me like it's going to make a, you know, is this a start? Is this carving out a little bottom here, a bounce off the bottom? Because it's bounced quite heavily, isn't it?
It's gone from
under 13 quid to £15.60 pretty
and
much.
If you looked at it on a daily chart, you could say, is this a little bit of an inverse head and shoulders? And you know it might be, the right shoulder needs a little bit more work, which means we could take a little bit dip back again, and the support's at 1.42 to 1.44.
Yeah,
I really like this. This should go all the way to 1.65, but
nice, £16.50. All right,
and then if it gets above £16.50, it's a proper breakout. The 200 day is at 1.72, so
yeah. I mean, look at the MACD. See, it's just coming over the over the zero there, just crossing the zero, the one line. Marvelous. All right, Nick, we'll obviously not don't include that one, obviously, but send me the annotated charts and I'll put them on sharepickers.com, and people can listen to the podcast and go through the charts and understand what's going on there. Marvellous. Thanks, Nick. Speak next week.
Okay, bye-bye.
Today's stock with potential, suggested by Adam. It's Galliford Try, ticker GFRD. What does the company do? One of the UK's leading house builder commercial construction firms. Would you say it's a short, medium or long-term investment? It's a long-term investment. How many shares does the company have in issue? 82 million. That's not a lot for, you know, a biggish company there, or a mid-cap company. Price is 14.68. Let me just check the chart. Now let's look at this. 14.56. So it's come back a little bit. Market cap of 1.2 billion. Revenue is 2.348 million or 2.3 billion. Pre-tax profit, 114 million. How much cash or debt does the company have? 95 million net debt, well covered by 114 million pre-tax profit. List three reasons you think this company has potential. Number one, company is expecting 11% growth in 2016. Margins have been increasing every year over the past 5 years. The return on equity at over 17%, also increasing over the past 5 years. Number two, 4% dividend with cover of 1.6. I like these stats. Adam, I'm impressed, fella. And number three, renewed relationship in place with MOD, Ministry of Defence. Galliford Try said they were worth up to 1.1 billion in total over a four-year period, with potential for a three-year extension. Individual projects worth up to 12 million each are to be produced through the framework. So that's Galliford Try. It's house builder I know quite well. I think I own shares in these once upon a time. Like I said, they are trying to increase their operating margin because it looks like it's, I don't know, what, 5%, 7%, man? But hopefully that's improving. And of course, we are, you know, in this country, majorly undersupplied in the housing sector. So you can, you know, whichever government gets in, you have to assume they're going to sort of ramp up house production or encourage that, because, like I said, the problem is, I think we're missing target by 150,000 houses a year, pretty much. So house builders, you can expect, I mean, I'm Barry from Beaufort Securities, did say earlier on in the week, we see another at least 2 years, at least, that's good for, I mean, it's very cyclical, the house building industry, but you can expect another 2 years at least of a bull market in the housing sector there, of house builders. So Galliford Try, and by all means, if you want to suggest a stock with potential, go to voxmarkets.co.uk/ blog. Click one of the blogs, the link there you'll see under the stock with potential. Click that, fill the form, and I will feature it on a future podcast. And in fact, I don't think there's many in the pipeline. I think this is one of the last, or one but last, so yours will be on the podcast in the next couple of days, hopefully. Listen, thanks for listening. Get involved with the podcast, please do. It helps it along immensely. You know, like that bit of research saying Galliford Try was excellent. Thank you, Adam. And if you haven't downloaded the Vox Markets app, please do that, because I use it now every day. Every day multiple times a day, especially for RNSs, and now you can set price alerts on there. So please go to voxmarkets.co.uk/app. Thanks for listening. I think there will be a weekend podcast, hopefully, if I can get hook up with the busy social diaries of Pete and Steve. Until then, thanks for listening. Have a nice weekend. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.